Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Wiki Weekdays podcast. I'm your host for this episode, Lucas Holland, and I am joined, as always, by the lovely Carl Smallwood.
Hello, and Lucas, you've got to mention, it's a special episode of the Wiki Weekdays podcast because things are a little different to what they'd normally be. So the way things normally work on Wiki Weekdays is that myself and Lucas will bring forward a wiki for discussion and then allow you, our audience, to vote on which one you thought inspired the best discussion. And last week, what conversation did we bring forward, Lucas?
I mean, Carl, you threw me under the bus before it even started. Like, you forgot. I did forget. I just hadn't got to that part of the intro yet.
Oh, okay. I just saw you like fall over and thought, rather than help you up, I'll just take the ball you were carrying and keep going.
Carl just kicking me under the bus straight away.
I'm not kicking you under the bus, but I did see you fall in front of the bus and didn't decide to help.
Dear God.
Like, yes, you were carrying like, you know, something important, and I picked that up and just thought, well, Lucas, the bus is not here for a while. He's got time.
Well, dear fucking God, Jesus Christ, Carl. The knowledge that I was carrying was that, yes, we are doing a special guest podcast this week, as informed by our lovely Patreon goals and Patreon supporters out there. We have another special, lovely guest podcast today, but that doesn't mean that last week's podcast doesn't have a winner. And unlike last time, where we weren't prepared in advance, this time we were. So we do actually have a which wiki won this week for this guest podcast. And last week, Carl, you brought Maurice Flintoff, I believe is the name?
Flitcroft. Yes, okay, and the Phantom of the Open.
Someone that brought some lovely disgrace to the golfing world.
And you use lovely as a modifier a lot.
Well, I do.
Not everything can be lovely. Because I feel so much less lovely when you call everything lovely.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm joking.
I'm trying.
Do you know what? You just got up from the bus and I was like, no, man, it's the second bus.
I'm trying. I'm trying my best, Carl. I don't know what to say.
It's been a long recording day, and I'm like, you know what? There's another bus.
There is. They all come at once, but dear God. You know, I like to say that they'd brought some shame to the world golfing because they're very pompous and they can go fuck themselves. So I was very glad to hear the tale of Maurice Flitcroft. I was about to say Flintoff again. That's Freddie Flintoff that I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
But I did bring myself the topic of Injustice Gods Among Us, the video game. And Carl, let me tell you that for once, my wiki won this week.
Well, congratulations to you. You win one internet point. And I'm laughing under my breath so much. One of the things I adore doing when we're recording live is just trying to get you to break.
I know.
And I don't manage it often, but when I do, and I get you flustered, it really tickles me because I know you really don't like not being professional.
I try to be professional, and then Carl's like, oh, the proverbial bus is right there, right? And I'm just there flustered, like, oh, let's get back on track.
It's the podcasting equivalent of when you're like talking to the class or whatever, and your friends just there pulling a funny face.
Yeah. It really is. But Carl, we also
yes.
have another gimmick that we do weekly, and that is, of course, the Pet of the Week. And we are recording this a little bit in advance compared to usual,
yes.
so I can edit this intro in with like the guest podcast and sort that all out and edit it, etc., etc. So we are doing it a few days early, but there haven't been many Pet of the Week submissions this week, so anyone that is on any level of our Patreon needs to kind of, you know, get your shit together and start submitting some Pet of the Week pictures.
Yeah,
because the winner of this week was a submission by Carl.
It's not my pet. It's my sister's cat, Mr. Jasper. So you can see Mr. Jasper just sat there in all his like resplendent glory. But I've got like two more pictures of Mr. Jasper I can share. So these are private photos that I took. Because like Mr. Jasper's my sister's cat. I was visiting family over the weekend. I was sleeping on the sofa because there's not like a spare room anymore. And Mr. Jasper just, he doesn't like it when I visit because I sleep on the sofa, which is where he sleeps. So I woke up in the middle of the night with just Mr. Jasper on my chest and I got a photo of him midway through waking up. But then I tried to get a photo of him when he was like asleep and didn't realise I'd flash on, so I accidentally flashbanged him.
Oh no.
So just Mr. Jasper got flashbanged and he was not happy.
Because that thing is like, obviously you went home, but that was kind of out of context. If there was just every now and then just a picture of Mr. Jasper appeared in the Pet of the Week, and I was like, who is Mr. Jasper?
That's the thing, so I like the idea that now it's like, who is he? Who is this mysterious Mr. Jasper? Mr. Jasper is just the cat belonging to my sister. And just he's so, like, as I said, he's just so noble. Except for when he's like, you know, half asleep and I get him out of one of his eyes shut, he's got the one eye going on.
Like most of us, flashbanged in the middle of waking up, aren't very elegant.
Exactly.
I'm going to do that to you next time around. No, I can't do that because I wake up like 7 hours.
So you are never going to wake up earlier than me. Do you know that whole thing of like you have to get up very early in the morning to catch me? I don't have to worry about that with Lucas. You don't wake up till 3 in the afternoon.
Yeah, but
so I can wake up, go to the gym and make myself my breakfast and I'm still all right. I still got 4 hours left.
Yeah, but when I'm just going to bed, I might be able to flashback you there.
That is the joke we have, right? Of like, we have like completely opposite sleep schedules.
Sleep schedules, yes. Yeah, indeed. But yeah, I just like, I love the idea of like, oh, well, Mr. Jasper didn't appear very elegant in this picture. Yeah, no shit. No shit, Carl.
It was 2 o'clock in the morning. It's like that, the photo like Limmy, isn't it? They use as like the content creator and actor. Where it's just the one of him in bed where someone turns the light on. He's like...
Oh, that is fantastic. But we are about to, you know, palm over to ourselves in a previous life where we are podcasting with a guest, a lovely guest, and we had a lovely discussion. And
wait, when was that recorded as well? Was there still hope in the world when we recorded this?
This was pretty Trump, right?
Oh, man. So if you think that we sound too hopeful in the conversation you're about to hear, it was like, it was pre the world going to shit again.
This was pre Elon, you know, putting his heart out to the world situation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think we sound too hopeful in this video talking about like the symbol of like truth, justice and the American way? That's why.
Yeah, I think it was like post-vote, but pre-Trump.
It was a simpler time.
Oh, one and a half months ago.
Lucas, it's been 3 weeks.
Yeah, I think it's been like close to like maybe 6 to 8 weeks. Like it's around.
It feels
that
like
time
it's been
frame.
14 years.
Because to be fair, like all you know, things aside, just to mention the fact that like this is the first guest podcast we ever recorded.
Yes, but not
but
the first
just
one
the
we're uploading.
The second one we recorded fell more in line with the Sims anniversary. So if you haven't listened to the podcast with Jayla, then you can go and listen to that. We talked all about The Sims and that just fell more in line with the timing of the Sims anniversary. We decided to pull out first, but this is technically the first ever guest podcast we recorded.
Yes, and we recorded it with our special guest, Eric Malachite, who, like, you know, links to their like socials and stuff can be found all nestled below among like links to our own stuff, mm-hmm. If you are so inclined. And yeah, it's a person I've worked with in the past. I continue to work with them. They're a good person. Like, we felt so just, what, bad about... Oh, sorry, was it you just speaking of content creators? Just the list of 50 things that they've done online, and we're like, well, we make a podcast that you're on right now. That's about it.
Yay.
But we don't, like, you know, it's all good fun.
Yeah, we do, you know, a few other things, links to which you can find below. But the important thing is that you appreciate Eric on this podcast. Go follow their links. That is the important takeaway from today. If you enjoyed them being on the podcast, then go and follow them elsewhere and follow the other projects because they're cool in other places.
Yes, well. And if you'd like to continue the conversation you're about to hear, you can do so in the Discord found link below. You can support us further on our Patreon, which you can also make suggestions for content and, like, you know, potential future guests to get on, because eventually I'm going to run out of friends.
Yeah,
and especially
going to
run out of
like,
friends who are famous. So
I keep, you know, coming up with that, just that, I want to say wall, but it's not even a wall because it's just the ignorance of like every person I reach out to. I don't know. So like, I just keep getting ignored. I'm trying my best, but eventually Carl's going to have people he knows and use as guests.
In the industry, yeah.
So let us know either in the Discord or in the comments below, other people we can maybe reach out to that might want to appear on this podcast that isn't just like your mate from high school that's got two viewers on Twitch. Like, that's me. I don't need more of me.
I was about to say, Lucas, that's you. You're my friend from high school who's got who's on Twitch.
Yeah, so like, you know, it so happens to be that there's anyone that you can make a decent suggestion for, like, you know, maybe we can actually watch some content of theirs and see that they're not like a horrible person with horrible opinions. And we try our best to vet people, but hey ho, that's all besides the point. I hope you enjoy the discussion from Pascal and Lucas, and off we go.
And there was still hope in our eyes. Yeah. Like, that's the thing. You're going to watch the video and see that we still have hope in our eyes. Like, where did that go?
It's been a real stressful couple of months, Carl. Things have not been the best. Oh, but I hope you'll enjoy the lovely podcast.
Yeah, thank you for listening.
Damn it, Carl.
I'm so sorry. Like I said, I saw the bus, like, I saw you get out of the way of the first bus and went, well, he's never going to make it out of the way of that second bus, especially if I tie his shoelaces together.
Oh, God damn. Enjoy.
It's the verbal equivalent of me telling you that you can see the end of your nose, right?
Or that you can feel yourself breathing.
Yeah, is that right? When you're just now hyper aware of the things that you're saying and doing. So I can only apologise, except for not really, because it made for great content.
God damn it.
So thank you to the introduction from presumably our future selves. But yes, we are joined here on a special episode of the podcast by my good friend Eric.
Hey.
So would you like to introduce yourselves to the folks at home, Eric, promote or plug as much or as little of your own stuff as you'd like?
Well, there's a lot. I am Eric Malachite. I'm an author of cosmic horror, dark fantasy, and cyberpunk. I love all that stuff. I love a lot more than that, too. I'm a huge fan of Dragon Ball, manga, science fiction, speculative fiction, weird fiction. I have ADHD, so there's probably no limit to the number of things that I am into at any given time. I've written for Crossroad Press. I have a bunch of stories out. For the Books of Cthulhu anthology series. So I'm producing a found footage audio podcast type thing. It's basically an audio drama for my OEI series, which started in the Books of Cthulhu. I've got several books coming out this year if I can get all the ducks in the row. I host for Biographics and Geographics, and Carl and I work together on some of those scripts too. And yeah, I'm doing a bunch of stuff. Like we just launched two new channels, About Us and Zoographics, over at Top Tens. Carl hosts for Top Tens as well, and we work together there too and whatnot. And I also run my own YouTube channel called Story Rant, which is more of like a video essay format type thing. But I'm thinking about bringing back a podcast format too, because video essays take fucking forever. So I have a lot of stuff. I'm also working on a tabletop RPG for shonen manga type stuff. So yeah, lots of stuff, lots of fun.
So Lucas, how insignificant do you feel right now by your workload? Right?
It's like, that's a busy person right there.
That's a busy year. That's like a busy week. That's a busy year for multiple people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I randomly in November for no reason whatsoever, I was just like, you know, I've had this like scattered notes and stuff and like old versions, because we ran this like Dragon Ball RPG that was a D20 thing, and it increasingly got more complicated over the years as we ran this play test that was really just a campaign. And I was like, you know, I'm just gonna compile it into a system reference document, see where it goes, and maybe in a year or so I'll have a full document and we'll be able to play test it and stuff. I wasn't planning on doing artwork or anything like that. I'm also an illustrator. I do some of my own book covers. I also illustrate characters and stuff. I get rusty from time to time and I have to relearn shit, but you know, that's the trouble with being a video editor, a author, a novelist, and an illustrator at the same time. Some skills go up and down as time goes. And I now have like 160 pages in this system reference document, and we're doing a playtest session zero this Sunday. And I have a bunch of character art and shit now too.
So at the moment, I'm feeling like that moment in Game of Thrones where it's like, this is Daenerys Targaryen, the breaker of chains, the leader of the free men. It's like, this is Jon Snow. It's like, I mean, it looks like we run a podcast. It's got Wiki Weekends. We don't write anything.
I know, so right?
You are familiar with the format of Wiki Weekends, Eric? Yes, it's where we'll
leading
you on a conversation with a wiki serving as a base. And you provided us with a handful of topics beforehand. And myself and Lucas, what's the word now when you secretly talk to each other without anyone knowing?
I wanted to use the word deliberated, but
deliberate,
I feel like
that's one.
You made it sound so much more sinister, like behind Eric's back.
Yeah, like
chose
some fucking cloak and dagger shit. You're going to take me out back and stab me.
No, we deliberated beforehand, Lucas. And what was the topic that we chose?
We decided to choose to talk about James Gunn.
Oh.
Yes, so Eric,
just
you
in general,
mentioned
James Gunn movies, like all that.
Just
everything
James
under
Gunn,
the sun.
Yeah, James Gunn, the person. And I believe beforehand, Eric, you gave me a handful of topics that you'd like to talk about, one of which was the new Superman movie, which will be directed by one James Gunn. So how familiar are you with his filmography, or just career
I'm pretty familiar. I've seen Super with Rainn Wilson, and I like that movie. It's weird. I have not seen Slither, I don't think, and there are a couple movies I haven't seen, but I've seen the first two Guardians of the Galaxy movie, but we haven't seen three because my wife is very emotional about Marvel movies and whatnot because it's a connection to her dad. So we haven't watched that one yet out of just waiting for her to be ready emotionally to be able to watch it.
I'll be honest, you might need to take a bit of time because I've never felt so much emotion for a CGI raccoon before.
Obviously, I don't know those emotions aside, but like just the whole like animal side of the depiction in Guardians 3, it is a tough watch because me and my partner like sat there just crying basically the entire movie in the theaters.
Oh no, it's gonna be one of those. So I've seen all of Creature Commandos, the soft launch of the DCU, loved it for the most part. There were some things up and downs and whatnot, but
I need to know about Creature Commandos because I've not gotten around to watching it yet. Mm-hmm. Is the skeleton dude, is that Blight?
No, it's not. It's not.
It's not Blight. Okay, so it's not the dude
villain,
from
though.
Batman of the Future.
No, it's okay. Dr. Phosphorus, and he's played by Alan Tudyk, who is on Resident Alien and a bunch of
everything.
Other DC stuff. He's everywhere, but I fucking love him. He was Wash in Firefly, so the guy's amazing.
I kept thinking that was Blight from Batman of the Future, because he's like one of the best new villains they introduced. Of just, well, he's like, you killed my dad. He's like, have you any idea how little that narrows it down? Like, he's that guy.
I love, like, over here it's called Batman Beyond. And
yes.
I know you've gotten annoyed at people for, like, trying to correct you. It's like, localization, man.
I don't get annoyed about it. What I do get frustrated by is people telling me that I'm wrong, but that's what it was called where I live.
I mean, let's not lie, though. Batman Beyond is a way better name.
It is.
I like Batman of the Future.
I mean, that's probably because that's what you saw first, right? Mm. You know, we always have an attachment to that.
Yeah. The one thing we will agree on, though, Eric, is over here in the UK, it was Teenage Mutant Hero Turtles. And how do you feel about that as a huge fan of the Ninja Turtles?
I just think it's funny that the word ninja was banned in the UK. Like, that's real fact.
They were allowed to use the word ninja in children's programming because it was deemed to be too aggressive. And they also censored Michelangelo's nunchaku because they were like, well, that's a weapon that kids could make at home. Keeping in mind, one of the characters had a stick.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'll be honest, I got a broom handle and spun that shit around and whacked my brother with it at least once.
Yeah, as kids, being fans of pretty much anything action-oriented, we would pick up anything, you know, broken fence posts, you know, we'd use those as swords, you know, short sticks for size, you know, anything. And we'd even make our own nunchucks, which was kind of dangerous, like tying two strings into a stick and then smacking yourself upside the head. That was...
So they were trying to avoid over here. The most criminal thing is that they changed the theme song. But they didn't change it enough because they didn't re-record it. You can clearly hear when you listen to the British version, you hear just someone say, hero.
Yeah, they just, like, sampled it. Teenage Mutant Hero.
It's basically that, yes. But we'll move back now to the topic of today's video. James Francis Gunn Jr. And I've just got to say, it's a fucking sick name. He's basically a comic book name, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
like James Francis Gunn Jr., is an American filmmaker. He began his career as a screenwriter in the mid-1990s, starting at Troma Entertainment with Tromeo and Juliet. He's began working as a director, starting with the comedy horror film Slither, which you said you've not watched, Eric, but I have. And it's,
I've not seen it yet.
It was a first date when I was like 15. It was not a good first date. It was a good movie, but it was not a good movie for a first date. It's very James Gunn-esque in its humor and the body horror aspects.
Yeah, yeah. I love body horror too, so it's kind of a crime that I haven't seen it yet.
it's pretty funny. And then he moved on to the superhero genre with Super. And Super is one of those like low-key, super good superhero movies because it has the best tagline. And do you remember the tagline, Eric or Lucas?
Shut up, crime?
Yeah. Just Rain Wilson. And the fact he's superhero weapon of choice, he's just a wrench. And it's like, what a great idea for a superhero. He just hits people with a wrench and tells criminals to shut up.
I put a couple clips in my upcoming Superman video for Story Rant, and it's just him holding the wrench up and just going, this'll do.
Yeah. But you know he's in like the Brightburn universe as well? Like, at some point, he was going to fight that kid from Brightburn.
I haven't seen Brightburn yet. Like, I'll be honest, like, I'm a little burned out on... And this is just, this is mainly me, and I've, you know, experienced The Boys and Injustice and all this, and I'm tired, and like Zack Snyder's darker take on Superman, I'm tired of that, you know? So it's like, when I heard there was gonna be, oh, it's Superman as a child, but he's evil, I'm like, okay, water's wet now?
It's pretty good, because it's one of the few shows, prior to the release of The Boys, of course, that shows what someone with superpowers hitting a regular person would look like. That was a moment where, like, he goes crazy, and the police are responding to, like, the call, like, well, there's some shit going down at his house. And you're just like, there's a whoosh of air, and then the police officer turns around, their partner is just a splat on the wall. And he's like, what would you do in that situation?
Right.
But the ending of the film has, like, a montage of like newspaper clippings, which includes Rain Wilson because he's part of that universe. It's like, what is he going to do?
They're just going to be the weirdest Justice League.
So he's just going to say, shut up, crime, and hit Superman with a wrench.
And I think with the concept of Brightburn, at least like they're doing it a little bit different, because not only the idea of evil Superman, but the idea of a child who hasn't learned to like actually handle their powers yet, so they're completely unchecked.
Yes, and there's some like great moments in it, but if neither of you have seen it, I'd just say I recommend it, and if you get around to watching it, do. Because it's funny to think that at the same time it's happening, Rain Wilson is beating people up with a wrench.
Yeah. I love Super. Like, it's a weird movie, but like, I like those kind of movies, these weird indie movies with a wry sense of humor, you know, and like and black comedies especially, like
just something Gunn is very good at. And when me and Lucas were just soft trialing this like topic, we're like, man, he's actually worked on a lot of stuff, you know. So the wiki continues. In 2022, Warner Bros. Hired Gunn and Peter Safran to become the co-chairman and co-CEOs of DC Studios. So he's like, that's going to soft launch the DCU, starting with Creature Commandos, which you recommend, yes.
Yeah, I definitely recommend it. It's like, it'll tug on your heartstrings too. I'm just saying, the Weasel episode is heartbreaking.
Okay, because the only thing I've seen is just out of context clips, which includes Dr. Phosphorus. Dr. Phosphorus, right?
Yep.
I thought it was Blight, because it's just glowing skeleton man just walking through a tank with like two middle fingers. Right? Okay, sure.
Like, so is that then Sean Gunn like repeating his role as Weasel from the Suicide Squad? Yeah.
Yep.
Nice.
Yeah, there's some things from the DCU that, like, the things that worked are being rolled into canon. You know, there's, you know, I think the Trinity are going to be, you know, recast and whatnot. So Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, all being recast. I think Jason Momoa is coming back as Lobo.
That's
great.
Which is
perfect. Oh, as Lobo. That's fucking perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because Jason Momoa, there's a Fast and Furious movie where he plays like a flamboyant villain. And in that Fast and Furious movie, you look and go, they should have cast him as Joker. Like,
Wow.
If you look at his performance, I wouldn't recommend the movie, but I would recommend to go look up the clips of Jason Momoa in Fast and Furious.
Okay.
And because he's wearing like a Joker style outfit of just like his bright pink shirt and like super tight pants. And he's just like swanning around like a dickhead, like throwing cars at people. It's like, let him do that. Let him be silly. And Lobo is a very silly character.
Yeah, he is. Oh, God, I love Lobo in Superman the Animated Series. He's great.
Just the main man.
Yeah, he's the main man. Like, all of his stories are super out there. Like, I love, like, as inaccessible as American comics tend to be, I love how weirdly cosmic they get and just ridiculous. Because, like, manga gets pretty ridiculous pretty easily, but they usually have an internal logic to why their universes are that way. But with DC and Marvel, they're just like, and then this happens, and you know, it's like it can come out of left field as a retcon and it'd be this huge fucking universe shattering thing. You know, it's fun.
It's the thing I'm looking forward to with James Gunn if he's like bringing in Lobo. Because I could think James Gunn will probably do like Mr. Mitzelplick. From like the sixth dimension or what have you. Which is he just clicks his fingers and Superman dies. Okay, cool.
Yeah, like I was shaking my head a little bit when you said that he was coming back, and then when you said as Lobo, I was like, oh, that makes more sense. But I can't get around the concept of rebooting a universe but being like, but we do want to keep a couple of things just to make it more confusing. It's like,
hey, Lucas, did you watch any of those Spider-Man movies where J.K. Simmons rocks up as just J.K. Simmons again? And it's not even like, you know, they brought Willem Dafoe back from another universe. No, it's just J.K. Simmons is also, he just so happens to be J. Jonah Jameson in that universe.
I think 10 years in, right?
Yeah.
The thing that, like, yeah, your average audience member is probably going to be a little confused that there are two Batmen active in the DCU, or like Robert Pattinson, whoever ends up getting cast. But they're fictional characters. You know?
Yeah.
Like, who cares?
Yeah,
like, the comics has done this before. So, you know, if the movies are good, people will move on. Nobody's going to give a shit.
You know, speaking of like good movies, Get Gunn has also been involved with writing and directing a web series called James Gunn's PG Porn, which is a lot more. Well, actually, no, to be fair, it's a lot. It's about as tame as you'd expect with the name PG Porn.
Yeah. What is
and
that?
It's pornographic. I'll bring up, you know, with Wiki Weekends, we can just bring up the wiki and tell you now. So James Gunn's PG Porn is a web series created by James Gunn, Brian Gunn, and Sean Gunn, because there's actually four Gunn brothers. There's four of them, like the Chuckle Brothers. It consists of a series of pornography spoofs with a humorous event occurring just before the supposed commencement of pornographic sexual acts. Each episode pairs a mainstream actor with a pornographic actress or model. The tagline is, for people who love everything about porn, except for the sex. So it's like, you're like your typical porno movie setup of like, I'm here to fix the filter. It's that with an actual pornographic actress or actor and then a celebrity.
So it's basically Zach and Miri make a porno.
The business. Yeah. That's just the kind of weird shit that you'd make.
Yeah, okay.
He's also been involved with, and that's the thing, you go from that to Peacemaker, which I do recommend. Peacemaker's fantastic.
Peacemaker's awesome.
The one of the funniest things in that entire show is where Peacekeeper John Cena tries to draw an eagle on his sniper rifle, and you can tell from the moment he do you like when you're drawing, Eric, and you know you fucked it up when you do that first line where he just keeps going.
Yeah.
And he gets it, and it's the most shit ass eagle you've ever seen. He just looks and goes, fuck! Just what? It's so bad.
Right. Yeah, Peacemaker was fucking great.
It's fantastic.
He's working on Peacemaker season two. So.
As he should, that is great. And they have like a villain in it, Lucas, called Judo Master. And the gimmick is that no matter how much he gets the shit kicked out of him, he just comes back and he's fine the next episode and beats people up. That's all he does. No matter, like, you think he's dead, and he just comes back in the next episode and he beats you up again.
That's great. Like, what's interesting, and so I don't know, you guys don't watch a lot of YouTube stuff, but like, since whenever I'm video editing, I always have a YouTube video up playing, and I've been watching a lot of Movie Bob stuff, and he had a video on Superman, and he was talking about how James Gunn's really good at the black comedy stuff and the irreverent humor, and how Creature Commandos kind of is almost a parody of the way the superhero movie industry is, like the genre itself, what it's become, because it's all very post 9/11, you know, paramilitary forces of costume guys. And his theory, I guess, is that Superman is going to be a rejection of all of that, because you see the corporate heroes like Green Lantern, Guy Gardner, you know, Hot Girl, and what's the third one? I don't even know.
It's Mr. Terrific, right?
Mr. Terrific. Yeah, that's right. Three very big names from the comics and whatnot, but they're all working for a corpo piece of shit called Maxwell Lord. Or Ted,
is it Maxwell
not
Lord?
Ted Cord. It's not Maxwell Lord. It's Stag.
I like Maxwell Lord.
Stag Industries. Okay. Yeah, so Maxwell like Lord's Lord. Still a villain. He's a very good villain, but they kind of screwed up using him in Wonder Woman 2.
Okay, I didn't watch that. I didn't care.
So the idea is that we think, based off of all of the things that James Gunn has said are the influences for this film, you know, Kingdom Come, All-Star Superman, Superman for All Seasons. I think what's so funny about Truth, Justice, and the American Way, and specifically Truth, Justice, what's so funny about Truth, Justice, and the American Way is literally about Superman being old-fashioned and, mm-hmm. you know, these newer heroes being really brutal and, you know, saying that, you know, Superman's time is done and whatnot. And I think he's taking a similar route to that, to show that, you know, Superman's wholesomeness and, you know, is sort of like the Christopher Reeve version of Superman or what have you, as he said in interviews, was his main inspiration behind this. So that's what he's going to present, almost like a rejection of everything that, not saying that the MCU is bad, but like, here's the way forward. Here's a better way type thing. And yeah. I find that could be really interesting.
We've not had a hopeful Superman for about, what, 30 years now?
Yeah, like even Superman Returns, which was supposed to be in the Donnerverse, was really depressing.
Well, yeah,
you know,
just Superman abandons his son on a
yeah, Superman the deadbeat dad,
yeah, and steals like James Marsden's girlfriend. Like, is he the most fucked over actor in terms of people stealing his girlfriend? Because Wolverine steals his girlfriend when he's Cyclops, and then Superman he jumps ship to DC, and they cast him as the dude who gets his girl stolen by Superman.
Yeah, and what's funny is, like, I would have liked to see James Marsden as Superman. He would have, I think, he would have killed it. Yeah,
there's plenty of actors that they were like floating for Superman, but Luke's like, what's your thoughts on a more hopeful Superman? The corny ass 60s, 70s Superman wearing his bright red shorts.
Yeah, I'm not necessarily sure that I want it to be like as corny as those older movies, but it is nice that we've gone like so full circle now that we've seen like that cycle of, you know, the darker, grittier films through like The Dark Knight and Man of Steel and Snyder and stuff. And like, it's nice and now refreshing once again to see things become a bit sillier and goofier and more hopeful, as you say.
Yeah, and the one thing I'm excited for is the actor they've cast to play Pa Kent, because he's like a fantastic character actor, and I'm just going to double check his name now. Because I think it's like something Pruitt.
He's definitely somebody that I recognise, but he's one of those actors that I recognise, but not knowing what I recognise him from.
Yes, I'm just going to try and find his name. I was putting the actor, and it's called like 15 different 15 different people who aren't him, because the movie's not out yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
So try and find him.
Yeah, it's Googling who played Pa Kent. It's like, yeah, just comes up with a lot of different people.
Pruitt Taylor Vince, and he's like a fantastic character actor who's been in a bunch of stuff, but I think he can really do it because he's like a huge dude. So he has like the broad shoulders, but he's also just such a friendly looking man. Mm-hmm. And I think he can really bring that like that strong, positive like male energy that is required to have a Superman who actually gives a shit.
Right.
Oh, the man. Real question is, how quickly is he going to tell Superman to let a bus full of children die?
It's still the funniest thing. Every time we bring it up in a video, someone always corrects that, like, you don't understand that scene. It's like, I do understand that scene because I've got eyes and ears. It just doesn't work.
It doesn't directly say the words, let them all die, but
you suggest it, right? I think the exact quote is, should I just let them die? Maybe. And it's like, Superman's dad should not be saying that.
Yeah, yeah. And like, I get where the I guess, logic behind trying to defend that character motivation, like he's not sure, you know, mm-hmm. but it's the wrong lesson to impart into a guy with godlike powers.
Yeah.
And this, like, I'm sorry, but the scene where Pa Kent dies by tornado is just so fucking stupid.
Yep, you are. You're preaching to the choir here because you must be aware of this, Eric. How does his dad die in almost every single adaptation?
It's usually a heart attack or something. Yep. Something that Superman can't stop.
Yeah, that's the point, right? It's to teach Superman that there's something, regardless of your power, sometimes just people die.
Like you could even make the argument that, oh, well, you turn back time. Why doesn't he just rewind time?
Yeah.
You're just going to watch it happen again.
You know? That's the lesson it imparts to Superman is that sometimes people just die. It's also really important to his characterization of being human.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, it's one of the things that grounds him as a person. Like, you have this godlike power, but you still have to stand there powerless as your father died in your arms. It imparts upon him like the value of life and why he cherishes it so much. When he's like, he just flew in at a million miles an hour and saved his dad.
Yeah. I mean, back to Lucas's point of like, we don't want it to be like the same level of cheese as like Superman 79 or 78. Oh, I mean, I'd be fine with that, honestly. I'll watch Superman 3 and be totally fine with it, with all the shenanigans. It's just a dumb, fun movie that makes no sense, but it's a fun watch. You know, it's like the Silver Age, you know? Yeah. But I like the idea of Superman being this larger-than-life character and him having a sense of humor about his job, you know?
Yep.
Like, the bad vibrations line, or really anything. That's not like to say that Clark Kent is a silly person, but he doesn't, he has fun doing what he's doing. He enjoys his job. Nowhere in the Zack Snyder movies does Superman feel like he enjoys his job. You know,
he hates life. He's frowning as he's rescuing people, which doesn't exactly inspire hope, right?
Yeah.
But he frowns when he's rescuing people. It's like, I don't want that guy. Right. It's like the whole point is that he has a smile on his face. He's a beacon of hope.
Right.
I was just going to say, like, literally reminds me of watching My Hero, of like All Might saying he always has the smile on his face to inspire hope in the people he saves.
Because even if
All Might's
like
a better Superman than Zack Snyder's Superman.
The thinking there is, no matter, like, if you see a man who has all that power but he's still got a smile on his face, it's going to make you think everything's going to be okay. Right, it'll inspire you to hold on for that 1 second longer.
Right. I just like, I rewatched Zack Snyder's Man of Steel, and like, I enjoyed it when it first came out as an action movie, you know. But the more you thought about it, the less it made sense, you know. And also, like back
the
then,
Jesus
I really
stuff,
wasn't
right?
that big of a huh.
The Jesus stuff as well, where he keeps portraying as a Christ figure, despite he's supposed to be like.
Well,
Jewish
that's also because Zack Snyder was a Christian scientist, and those people are crazy. Like, of all the cults, like, and you know, you could consider it a cult or not or what have you, but whatever. Of all of the American Christian cults or what have you, like, they're probably kind of tame compared to, you know, any of the others, but. But like they still believe some weird stuff, and there's a lot of that in Man of Steel too. Like I saw a recent like video about that, and it was kind of enlightening. Just like holy shit, you know, that all matches up to what these people believe. That's interesting. I mean, there's nothing wrong with putting your own beliefs on a character for a reinterpretation. I don't think there's anything wrong with that, but I don't think it was particularly done well or meshes with, you know, the fact that this is an American myth made by two Jewish boys who grew up during the Great Depression. You know, like if Superman is a biblical style character, he's more like Moses or something. He's more Old Testament than anything else.
Like he literally turns up in a wicker basket. Right.
Right.
they find him in a basket on their lawn, a la Moses, being found like in the burning bush, like in the reeds, comes from far away, but he's destined to save people. So he's not that difficult to understand. Like, just watch Prince of Egypt. It's for kids.
Yeah. Yeah. And, like, I find it really strange that the Snyder fans that are just so gung-ho about Cavill and Snyder, and, like, I like Cavill as an actor for the most part, but I don't buy him as Superman, you know?
No, he's
a bit wooden. He doesn't smile, he's a bit wooden, and he just doesn't feel sincere to me. But, like, I don't understand getting so worked up about the fact that a superhero movie, a Superman movie, is being aimed at children.
It's usually the first superhero people draw. It's him and Spider-Man, right? When you have those like global rankings, it's Spider-Man, Superman, and then when kids get a bit older, usually Batman.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, one of the first superheroes I ever drew was Batman, so I guess I was just fucked from the beginning.
It's been easy. Just draw two big ears, and then the rest is just darkness. It's fine. It's fine. Put yourself in as first superhero. Guess it's got to be Spider-Man, right?
For me, it was like Spider-Man and X-Men and just like, you know, all of those like Marvel, Fox, 90s cartoons then going into the animated series.
It was obviously Spider-Man, right? Where just the intro is them a screaming guitar solo as a robo voice just keeps saying radioactive spider blood. And you're like, yeah, let's go.
I mean, I watched all those shows too, and like I wasn't as into Spider-Man and the X-Men, but I still really liked them. I drew Spider-Man quite a bit. My brother was more into X-Men. He, in high school, he had like all the action figures, so you know. But yeah, like as kids, we didn't differentiate between DC and Marvel. You know, there weren't these fights between fanboys of like what's better. It's like it's all good. Just enjoy what you enjoy.
Yeah, it's not a bad thing to have you know, a superhero aimed at children. But speaking of Mr. Zack Snyder, you know, we'll leave him now on the planet he lives on, where the atmosphere is entirely his own farts. But there is a joint. Like a bit of synergy between him and James Gunn, because other work James Gunn is known for include writing the 2004 remake of Dawn of the Dead. Oh. So he wrote the screenplay for Zack Snyder's directorial debut.
Oh.
So they have worked together in the past. And that is Zack Snyder's most competent movie.
One of the better Zack Snyder movies?
Yeah.
It's his most competent movie, because it's one that... the satirical elements are still there to a degree. Whereas before Zack Snyder started getting enough budget to put all his weird like Ayn Rand shit in.
Yeah.
Because like he's big into Ayn Rand, which is like libertarianism. And that's why his Superman is super selfish. And it's like, you don't owe people anything. It's like, okay. But yeah, like, James Gunn wrote the screenplay for that movie.
I think that's a good combination, right? Is because James Gunn's very good at screenwriting, and like obviously he's a good director as well, but he's a good screenwriter, and Zack Snyder's very competent at like making action work on screen.
Yeah. That's probably the biggest thing. His biggest talent is.
I said Zack Snyder should direct Super Bowl commercials.
Right.
No shame. I think that's what he'd be good at. Mm-hmm. There was like super big, like 2-3 minute long commercials that are like essentially mini movies. He should direct those.
Mm-hmm.
Or this is my idea. Instead of like trying to adapt Superman, you should adapt Reign of the Superman, where like the whole point is it's a bunch of people who don't understand what Superman is trying to vie to be Superman. Like Henry Cavill should have been revealed to be a robot halfway through like Man of Steel.
He would make such a good Hank Henshaw.
Yeah, like he could have done like Reign of a Superman, where the whole point of the storyline is no one understands what Superman stands for.
Yeah, I mean,
he would have made it, but he unironically would have made a great one trying to be serious.
What's interesting is, like, you know, there are directors that are very competent in one area, but they get like massive egos to the point where they're like, okay, well, I'm going to do everything. I'm going to be an auteur, you know. And with Zack Snyder, I think he's really good at action. He should lay off the slow-mo though.
Oh, yeah.
Like but he's really good at action. He's good at making things look cool, you know. Mm-hmm. If he stuck to, you know, what he's good at and partnered with a really strong writer like a James Gunn.
Like a James Gunn.
Yeah. I think his he'd have a lot more success in Hollywood, I think, and like just success with the audience in general.
Yeah, like he's got his own niche, but yeah, you know, in regards to James Gunn, he moved on after, you know, direct or writing Zack Snyder's directorial debut. He moved on to Scooby-Doo and Scooby-Doo 2 Monsters Unleashed.
I fucking love that.
That's the thing, but like, so he wrote Dawn of the Dead in 2004. Before that, he wrote Scooby-Doo, and at the same time he was writing a screenplay for Dawn of the Dead, he wrote the screenplay and directed. Or did he direct it? Let's double check.
Yes. But I think he directed the first one.
Okay, the first one was directed by... Well, sorry, we can double check. No, they were both directed by Raja Gosnell, but James Gunn wrote them both. But he wrote Scooby-Doo 2 at the same time he wrote Dawn of the Dead. I mean, just shows some range, right? That's some range.
He's got range. Like, everyone's like, oh, he's too dark, and he's, you know, he's just going to pack it full of irreverent humor. It's like, no, he's got hella range. Like, just wait and see. Just wait and see. Stop, like all these people calling the new Superman Diaper Man and everything, because they're looking at set photos that don't look, like, amazing because they're not from the right angle that the suit is meant to be viewed from, or they're looking at a baggier, you know, a suit meant for action scenes so the actors can actually move on set. And, like, the suit looks great in the trailer.
Oh, yeah.
It looks awesome. Like, it's got folds and stuff, like the All-Star Superman suit, and it's got, like, a little bit from every era, you know? Mm-hmm. And, like, David Corenswet, the guy who's playing Superman, actually sold James Gunn on the whole Trunks thing, because, like, wrestlers today, they still wear those, the strongman Trunks and whatnot, and he's like, he's gonna dress like a wrestler to make kids not afraid of him, you know. It's kind of like an extension of he smiles to make reassure people that he's not gonna murder them and laser them into oblivion.
You know what? I never considered that, but yeah, wrestlers, some of the most popular entertainers with, like, younger people, do wear the goofy shorts and the big like tall boots, right? Which has, like, been a mainstay of Superman's costume for decades.
Yeah, and everyone's, like, the discourse with superhero movies is like, oh, remove the trunks. And while I agree for some of them, like, Batman probably doesn't need them, you know, but Superman, absolutely. And not only does it, like, visually break up his costume so it's not just blue, you know, with a little bit of red, it makes him look kind of silly, and that's kind of the point of Superman. He should look a little silly. He's still cool, but when you leave a Superman movie, you should have a big, stupid, cheesy grin on your face. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I never got that with Zack Snyder.
No, I'm also a fan of, like, Superman. When people ask him where he gets his costume from, he's like, my mom made it for me. That's such a Superman line, right? I think it's the Lois and Clark TV show, the more recent one.
Superman
where,
Lois.
Like, the first episode is like, that's a cool costume. Thanks, my mom made it for me. It's like,
I would have been down if they just kept him in that suit the whole time. Like, I'm not a big fan of the suit they use for the majority of the show. Like, because it's, again, very muted blue, you know, it's very dark. And, like, for a Superman that is very hopeful, that is family-oriented and whatnot, it's a little strange that they chose such a dark blue. Like, in the final season, it almost looks black in some scenes. Like, it's a little weird.
It's, like, very navy.
Yeah.
You have a favorite Superman suit, Lucas? You're looking very contemplative.
Yeah, no, I was just, you know, collecting my thoughts, but I do think it's strange to, like, have many doubts at this point, because I think that trailer was very good, if maybe a bit busy, but, like, that may be just a bunch of, like, cameos that are only a couple of minutes long. We don't know how that's going to structure in the movie, but I think the suit looks excellent, and kind of to the point of, like, a homemade suit, one of my favorite suits in all of Marvel, like, the MCU version of Marvel, at least, is, like, the homemade Homecoming Spider-Man suit that he's just like, I didn't know what I was doing. I've just got, like, a hoodie and some goggles on.
Yep. And you still recognize it as Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
It just shows to show
that suit's fun.
Having faith in your idea. But speaking of having faith in your idea, not everything James Gunn has worked on has been a winner. Following Scooby-Doo Monsters Unleashed, he wrote and produced the horror action film, The Belko Experiment, which is fine.
Mm.
It's not much to write home about, but it's interesting at least. As you know, if you're a fan of James Gunn or you're looking forward to his Superman movie and want to check out his other work, it's worth checking out. He produced the superhero horror film Brightburn and then contributed in 2013 to the anthology film Movie 43.
Oh no.
Yeah, and Movie 43, me and Lucas talked about this yesterday.
I couldn't finish it.
A Wiki Weekends at some point, but both of us need to rewatch it, and we don't want to do that. And it will also be an episode on a weekend so we can put clips in, because if we're watching it, the audience has got to watch it too. And it mentions here that he directed the segment Beezel. And I don't remember what the Beezel segment was, so Lucas would like to talk about Movie 43 while I find out what Beezel is.
It's the only movie that I actively remember going to see, like, in the cinema with a bunch of friends and all coming out going, we had a dreadful time.
I left it early. It's the only movie I've ever left early.
Wow.
In all of my cinema watching history, me and like three or four friends went and watched it, and just halfway through the film, I leant over and went, should we go? And I remember specifically the moment it was, and it's the Superman scene. Do you remember, like, the god-awful, like, Superman speed dating scene?
I think I've eliminated that movie from my brain.
Which is, on paper, a funny skit for, like, a two-minute SNL bit. It's 15 minutes long.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And I mentioned, and I checked here, the Beezel segment is just about an animated cat that masturbates. Which is very James Gunn, and it only appears in the mid-credit scene. Which is probably why I don't remember it.
It's with James Gunn and masturbating jokes.
Yeah. It's an animated cat that masturbates and tries to run over its owner's girlfriend. And it stars Elizabeth Banks, Geoff Duhamel.
I mean, I think sometimes directors get like, you know, it'd be really funny to get these aspiring serious actors to do this really stupid fucking thing.
Well, that's what Movie 43 was sold on. Apparently the very first thing they filmed was the Hugh Jackman scene, because they got him for like a day. And he thought it was funny because that's the one where he has like testicles on his chin. And the directors of that basically begged, borrowed, and stealed everything they could. And they just harassed celebrities for years. Literally years.
Wasn't there a controversy that they stole that from South Park, or was it the other way around?
They probably stole a bunch of stuff, because you know what? I would not want to claim ownership of this movie. And everyone who's appeared in it, and everyone who wrote a segment for it or directed a segment, talks about how like we didn't know it'd be that bad.
Wow.
Like, do you
well, that's
think,
fun.
Because we checked and there was like 15 directors and 20 writers or something associated with the project. And it does make me wonder, did they all like individually phone their segment in thinking everyone else would make up for it?
I think that's what happened. And eventually we'll talk about it when we do the full episode. And we will be putting lots of clips in. But just as a idea of how many people were involved with this beyond the person who produced it, Charles B. Wessler. Like, you know, enemy of comedy. It has segments directed and written by, including not limited to, Stephen Brill, Peter Farrelly, Will Graham, Stephen Carr, Griff Dunn, Elizabeth Banks, Brett Ratner, Rusty Cundiff, James Gunn, Bob Odenkirk, Greg Pritkin, Jeremy Stazenko. It has like, and then the cast list is just like enormous. Justin Long, Hugh Jackman, Terrence Howard, Anna Faris, Josh Duhamel, Gerard Butler, Katie Bosworth, Leslie Bibb, Halle Berry, Kristen Bell, Chloe Grace Moretz, Chris Pratt, Liv Schreiber, Emma Stone, Jason Sudeikis, Uma Thurman, Naomi Watts, and Kate Winslet. To name but a few. And the way they got them is they just bugged them for literally years until they said, okay, I'll work one day for scale.
Oh.
And it worked. Like, I think, Lucas, you might be right. It just everyone did it. Like, oh, for fuck's sake, I got drunk at a party and agreed to do this. Sure. Do you know, that's the thing that happens a lot. Have you ever heard about, like, there was a, like, Keanu Reeves, like, his agent was nicking his money and just signed his name on a shit movie without telling him? And when he found out, he's like, how much would it cost me to get out of this? And like, it cost you several million dollars to get out of it. He's like, I'll be in the movie. Same thing happened to Whoopi Goldberg, where she appeared in, I think it's like that T-Rex movie, where it's her and a T-Rex solving crimes.
You can't tell me that that was not her choice, Carl.
No, because that was the movie she appeared in after she got her Oscar.
That was a passion project.
I'd be interested to rewatch that to see how bad it actually is.
But she got, like, basically tricked into being in that movie, and she was really annoyed about it. you know, it's a topic for another day. But the final thing mentioned in the introduction to James Gunn's work is simply that he worked on the 2012 hack and slash video game Lollipop Chainsaw.
Which I remember
just
that.
Got a re-release.
You know what? Lollipop Chainsaw's all right, and Lollipop Chainsaw, no, it's fine because it's a bit, it knows what it is.
Yeah.
It's also, still not a great video game, though.
It's not a great video game, but it knows what it is. And Joe, it reminds me of? It reminds me of Sucker Punch a little bit. But, like, it's Sucker Punch, but it actually doesn't, it actually knows that it's a joke. Yeah, it knows that it's a joke.
Oh, God, Sucker Punch.
Again, like, there's some fun action in that movie, despite, like, the rest of the problems of that film.
Yeah, I know people that will die defending that film.
I would have done as a 14-year-old, yes.
Yeah. Right. I know 30-year-old men that will die defending that film.
It still has one of the funniest achievements in video game history, whereas when you scroll the camera down to look at the main character's skirt, you immediately get an achievement. That says, it was an accident, I swear, and you can never delete it from your profile.
Oh my God. That's funny.
It knows. They know. And it's like, it's on your account forever.
Which is funny for the people who, like, didn't realize they'd get called out, but when you're sitting there like, oh man, I've only got one achievement left, what is it? And it's, oh, I've got, no. Those completionists out there.
Thinking about one person, one of my friends specifically, and I know he's got that achievement on his profile. I know for a fact.
One of the funniest ones is in Dead or Alive, there was a 0-point achievement for losing 5 times in a row online that just said, you suck. Just that was, people would complain like, I don't want this on my profile. It's like, you've got it now. You suck. Deal with it.
Oh God, do you think that achievement?
That's really fucking funny. Because, like, I know a bunch of people that are like real completionists when it comes to getting their trophies. Like, I gotta get the platinum. I don't give a flying fuck about a platinum. I don't care. The game's not fun. I'm not going to get, even if I love the game, like Shredder's Revenge, play the fuck out of Shredder's Revenge. I still haven't gotten all the achievements. I play where my focus is, where I'm having fun, you know?
Yeah, I think I usually, like, use it as a checklist to continue playing a game, as an excuse to continue playing it, like, if I really love the game, like, you know, quite a lot of the time, like, the Spider-Man games, for example, on PlayStation 4, like, I got the platinums for that because I was still enjoying that game and wanted an excuse to keep playing.
Right, right. No, like, I don't think it's wrong to play games that way at all, but that's not what I'm saying. But it is interesting, you know, when people are asking me, oh, have you gotten the platinum trophy? Fuck no.
Yeah, well, people do want those chivos. And getting back to James Gunn, I have got just a incomplete list of his projects that he's worked on, but he didn't do enough work on to be considered, you know, a main contributor, but he nonetheless worked on them. They include Avengers Infinity War, where he added additional dialogue. So additional dialogue was credit to him. He also worked on 13 fucking Ghosts as a uncredited rewrite of the entire film.
Oh.
And then he directed the Stan Lee cameo scenes in Doctor Strange and Spider-Man Homecoming.
And one thing we haven't really mentioned much is probably the thing he's maybe best known for, which is Guardians. And
yeah,
I actually saw, like, an interesting snippet of an interview with him, like, literally, I think it was yesterday or the day before, where just, he wasn't very mad about the fact that they, spoilers for, you know, Infinity War and Guardians 2, I guess, is, like, he wasn't mad that the Russos asked him, can they kill Gamora in Infinity War, because he'd actually originally planned to kill Gamora off in Guardians 2, and decided that it wasn't actually the right fit, and Yondu ended up being the one to sacrifice himself for Quill instead of Gamora, but his original plan was to just kill her in two anyway.
Yeah, she'd make James Gunn move, right?
So it's interesting that he decided not to, and then immediately the Russos are like, maybe we could kill Gamora, though.
Yeah. My wife was really mad that Gamora was killed off and then immediately replaced by an alternate version of herself.
It's fine. Yeah, sorry, it's fine. She got better. She got better like 5 minutes later.
And I think is something that James Gunn literally talked about, is that he wanted death to matter, and that's one thing that I think he wants to make sure happens in his DC universe.
If someone dies, they die forever. And that's, I think the Russos have confirmed that if you died by the Soul Stone, you are dead. There's no coming back from that. It's like, it's so, it has to be, to not make light of a sacrifice, if you could just bring the person back, it is straight up, they are dead forever. So, like,
the people Dragon killed by the Soul Stone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They would revive too many times, the Dragon Balls won't work.
You know, except for the Super Dragon Balls. I always liked, like, in the original manga for Dragon Ball, that, you know, there were limits to what the Dragon Balls could do. You know, they increase those limits as the threats get worse to a certain degree, but they're never like, oh, well, you know, if the Earth Dragon Balls won't work, let's go to Namek. And if the Namek Dragon Balls won't work, let's go get the Super Dragon Balls. And or
I love how they're just the fucking Super Dragon Balls.
Right. Like, Dragon Ball Super, there are no stakes at all.
Well, it's so fun.
It's fun. Like, it's fun, yeah. I like the slice of life stuff. I like the tournament of power, but, like, Resurrection F is pretty bad in places.
Well, you've got to admit, it's pretty baller. Is it Resurrection F or Broly, where Frieza just wants to get the Dragon Balls to be taller?
It's Broly. Broly's fucking awesome.
Okay, yeah, I just love it. Like, but sire, you could be in your second form. Like, but I don't want to be taller in my second form. I want to be taller in my final form.
Yes.
Like, Bulma just secretly nicks the Dragon Balls once a year to be a little bit younger. She just get a little bit of Botox.
Like, just a little bit. It's even worse, like, later on, I think, in Superhero, Bulma is just straight up using them for cosmetic instead of, like, plastic surgery. She's increasing her butt size a little bit, or, you know.
Yeah, just a little bit, though. Not too much that would be noticeable.
Right, right.
Why do we only get one wish? It's like, oh, regulars get more wishes. I like them.
Besides Resurrection F, I've liked the movies better than, like, the anime version of Super. Like, they're just... I really don't like the way that Goku is written in Super. He's just... he's too stupid. Like, Goku's pretty naive, and he's got a one-track mind. But in the original manga, he's pretty fucking smart when he needs to be, you know? Like, especially in the Namek saga, he's, like, fucking on point.
It's just, I've seen the breakdowns where he is legit a battle genius.
Yes.
And there's, like, breakdowns of, like, fight scenes and stuff where he will adapt on the fly.
Yeah.
And they don't really take the, like, battle genius element out of him in Super necessarily, but the rest of, like, any independent thought seems to just be gone from the character.
Right. Reviving Frieza. I'm going to revive Frieza,
I mean,
just because
was,
he's...
That was, like, 4D chess right there. That was actually pretty smart. If he can only come back for a day... You know,
and yeah, like, you just didn't expect Whis to bring him back forever. And I do like, it's in the original Japanese, right? Goku is a lot more, he's smarter than he is in the English version, because when he's talking to Frieza, it's not just, hey, Frieza, we'll bring you back for a day, don't you be evil. Like, he admits, like, yeah, I do want to see how much stronger you can get. It's kind of, I'm bringing you back for kind of selfish reasons, because you're the only person I know who can get stronger.
Yeah, yeah. Like, so my wife and I have been rewatching Dragon Ball, or for her it's the first time, and we got to Kai. We watched all of the original Dragon Ball anime, which for me, I've only read those as manga, so that was a new experience for me, and there is so much fucking filler.
She
could not finish the series for the 23rd Tenkaichi Budokai, so she read the manga version of that, and I watched the rest, and it was... It was pretty legit. Like, some of the animation in that's fucking top tier. And it is a crime against the Dragon Ball fandom that more people have not seen 40% of the fucking story at this point, right? But we got to the Saiyan saga, and when Goku spares, spoilers, everyone, I know it's been out for a while, but when Goku spares Vegeta and the reasoning behind it, she's like, no, why would you do that? Why, Goku? It's like, it's genetics, you know? And they explain that later on, and she slowly, begrudgingly accepted that, especially on Namek when he snaps and he loses all reason as a Super Saiyan, and like he starts talking different and, you know, behaving different. It's like, no, that's his, that's the nature part coming out in him versus, you know, who he is as a person. Like, Goku is a very good person, but he's not a hero. He doesn't consider himself a hero.
No,
that's, and that's Gohan. Really interesting. Yeah, that's
in
Gohan.
The outfit they make.
Gohan's a superhero
all the time. In every single like bit of Dragon Ball media, I think Sparking Zero, all of the interactions you have as the Great Saiyan Man, everyone is fucking roasting for it.
I love the Great Saiyan Man. I love it's that great. Little. It's great. It's so good. It's I like he saw the Ginyu Force and was like, that's a great idea.
But also the fact the colors are inspired a little bit by Android 16. It's like, oh, right. So good.
That, you know, without like the bandana and everything in the glasses, that's a sweet looking costume.
Oh, it's
like,
great.
That
yeah,
is
my
one
favorite
of
costume.
Gohan's best costumes.
The one glove
hands
of the Michael Jackson tech.
Yeah. Yeah. I love the Buu Saga. Like, a lot of people don't like that have issues with the Buu Saga, and that it's kind of all over the place in places, but I love it. Like, it brings back a lot of the mysticism in Dragon Ball and whatnot, and it's just fun.
Yeah, I think like
we're way off
Dragon
topic.
Ball included,
sorry.
No, like, it's fine. That's the point.
Yeah.
What kind of conversation arises as a result of going through a wicket?
Right.
Just Dragon Ball, even including Buu, I guess, but like Dragon Ball Super especially, it's like, it's very, like, fun smashing action figures together and yeah, that kind of vibe. But yeah, it's definitely not, like, I think the peaks are just, you know, original Dragon Ball and the first couple of arcs of Z.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Like, I'm not one of those people that stands for either OG Dragon Ball or Z because it's all the same manga, and it's really fascinating yes. to see how Akira Toriyama developed things and his art style too. Like, he's just my favorite artist, hands down. And like, as you know, we were watching the anime, and I was showing my wife the manga for the Frieza Saga. She's like, ah, oh, this art is just so fucking good. Like, they really butchered it in places. Like, even the yep. fight with Frieza itself is a top tier fucking fight. Like, that scissor kick toward the end, which they animated in, I think, the extended Battle of Gods thing. It's just, it's good. It's gorgeous. Gorgeous fucking artwork. And like, Akira Toriyama, hands down, is just like a master of depicting movement through panels, which is something that is incredibly hard to do. I've tried to do it, and I can't quite get it right either. And he's just, it's effortless for this guy, or was, yep. you know, rest in peace, yep. man.
I do like, I've seen all the breakdowns of how much is the people in charge got pissed off, like, are you really going to give Cell spots? Have you any idea how fucking hard that is to animate? Right? Have you any idea how hard that is to animate? Really?
He didn't watch the anime. He didn't care.
He didn't give a fuck. It's like, no, bollocks to you. Like, Cell's got like 8 forms. Is that true? You might know this. Is it true that the reason Cell transforms so much is because when he sent in the first thing of like first form Cell, the people in charge were like, okay, that's too scary?
It was his editor. His editor was like, no, he's too ugly. His second
form,
like,
second
ugly. Make him
Cell.
Prettier.
And then he made Perfect Cell.
Well, originally, also, 19 and 20 were supposed to be the androids, you know?
Yeah, and then he didn't like those, right? So then they brought in more androids, didn't like those, brought in Cell. Didn't like that, so he made Cell Transforms. I don't like that, so he made Perfect Cell.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the origin for Super Saiyan is really just like, well, I was trying to figure out how to make Goku seem more powerful, and, you know, we could just kill two birds with one stone by just not having to fill his hair in black.
Yeah, wasn't that, wasn't it time. Inspired by that as well? It took so long to ink Goku's hair, so he's made it white. He also forgot to draw the tails for a couple, like, panels, right? It's like, oh, fuck it, Saiyan tails are a ball, like, to draw, I cut it off.
Right. Like, and I think that's kind of a shame because the tails are fun, you know. I mean, Kami's got to put the moon back though, so you know. Otherwise, all life on Earth would be exterminated.
I think it's crazy that kind of that he managed to successfully pull off the switch from like a fantasy epic to a sci-fi.
Yeah,
just, everyone just went with it.
Yeah, well, it's like, well, fuck it, we got like just Galactic Hitler. Let's go.
Yeah. What's really interesting about that is that, and I was looking into this a little bit as I was developing the tabletop RPG, which does not have Dragon Ball as a setting, but you know, you can totally homebrew it whenever it kickstarts. Dragon Ball has like a 3-part power system, basically. It's tech, which is there from the very fucking beginning. It's ki and it's magic. Like, ki and martial arts are basically inseparable. And the magic uses ki or genki, you know. It's really interesting because throughout the series, with the Red Ribbon Army and with all of the different villains and whatnot, there is like a mixture of all of these different elements to create the power system. Like, there's no, like, a lot of people will claim, and there is some merit to this, that, you know, Dragon Ball is always, you know, an upward scale for power scaling. And that's true. There's not a lot of, like, lateral movement like a lot of modern shonen has. Like, but there is some, because, like, the androids coming out of left field and being stronger than Super Saiyans, or being able to outlast a Super Saiyan or what have you. That's really interesting, and it's
power, baby. I love right. They keep mentioning that right in the tournament of power. It's like, won't we get tired? Unlimited energy, baby. It's like, yeah. Shouldn't we figure that out? Wouldn't that be really helpful if we knew how to do that? It's like, nah, it's fine.
Right. Like, the martial artists, the Saiyans, their best solution for that is, like, I'm just going to get stronger, and then I'm going to conserve my strength through this, or what have you. And the Tournament of Power stretches the limits of suspension of disbelief for being able to restore your own stamina on your own for, like...
They just keep giving it to Goku, arc. Right?
Yeah.
Everyone just gives their energy to Goku.
And he keeps getting a second wind and surpassing his limits and stuff. It's a little ridiculous, but it's fun.
His 14th win. We mentioned it in a video the other day, didn't we, Lucas, of the best part of that entire thing is just where Kefla's like, you can't dodge in midair, and it's like, observe. He cracks me up every time.
That Kamehameha is just, it's fucking legendary. Like, there will probably never be a Kamehameha that tops that. Like, you had the Super Saiyan Blue Gogeta dodge on Broly, and that was pretty cool, but, like, that Kamehameha is just on point. Like, I'll
I'm
say
still
this about Ultra Instinct.
One. Like, the one-armed one's pretty good, because it's just when Gohan starts walking forward, it's like, oh, that's so good.
It is. Like, okay, so here's a question. Carl, I'm sure you've done Dragon Ball videos before and read the comments. Like, what is the most annoying Dragon Ball take for you personally?
I don't know. Most people don't. They have the same takes, because it's really hard to actually find a unique take online, because most people just repeat what they heard another YouTuber say.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's not really many takes about Dragon Ball besides people saying that they don't like Gohan. That's why I don't like people that they don't like Gohan on the Great Saiyan, or they don't like the silly aspects, even though that's kind of what it all started from.
That's a whole
like,
fucking
you watch
point.
The original Dragon Ball, there's a lot of comedy there.
Like, even in the more serious arcs, there's always comedy. Always.
Yes, I'm never the biggest fan of people who just want to watch the big battles, even though it's the slice of life stuff that's more interesting, because I've spent decades of these characters now. I like just Vegeta learning how to make an omelette. So, okay, how does the second strongest man in the universe make an omelette? Answer, very carefully. It just keeps cracking the eggs.
Yeah. That episode was so great. And the one where he finally took Trunks to the amusement park.
Yeah.
Fucking just, adorable.
He hates it. It's like, I've never embraced you as a son. Karate! And it's like, breaths his son's neck. It's great.
Right.
By Lucas. What's your least favorite Dragon Ball take? There are many bad Dragon Ball takes.
God, the Gohan one really pisses me off. Like,
why doesn't he get stronger?
Why doesn't he get stronger? Man, they really ruined him, you know? It's like, no, he wanted to be a scholar his whole life. That's what he cares about. That was the whole point of the Cell games, and why Goku's, you know, betting it all on Gohan was a little misguided. Like, he it was great that he had faith in his son, you know? And, like, I think the idea that Goku is a bad father is one of the more annoying ones. Not because there isn't some merit there, but, like, the dude was dead for most of Dragon Ball.
He came back.
Right. He came back, and, like, personally, the way, like, Akira Toriyama was not big into showing the slice of life stuff in Dragon Ball, the manga. Like, not until Great Saiyaman. We didn't see a lot of that throughout the manga up till that point. So you had, you have to infer by what Goku says and what his actions are. So when he arrives on Namek, he promises to take his son fishing again, you know? And, like, there's just little moments where Goku shows that he cares about his son and that he wants to spend time with him. You know, he wants to go camping with him and whatnot. And maybe he can't relate to him about being a great scholar because his brain is, like, destroyed.
Yeah, but he literally started his life, like, with, what, getting cracked on the head with a rock.
Right, right. He's got brain damage, you know. But, like, everyone that's just like, you know, Piccolo's his daddy. No, Piccolo's his uncle. You know, there's a nice family dynamic between Piccolo, Goku, and Gohan. And it's very wholesome. Like, yeah, he's not the perfect dad, but he literally died for his son at the start of the Saiyan arc. Like, come on.
I think it's probably correct to say that he's very misguided rather than a bad dad.
As well, how much of it as well do you think is directly inspired by people's knowledge of Dragon Ball coming from the Abridged series?
A lot.
Because how much of, like, the jokes about Goku being a bad dad come from that?
I mean, Abridged is really fucking funny, but, like...
My guess is that it's more than 0% of people whose opinion on the series comes from that, thinking that it's more true to life than it is instead of a parody of it.
I mean, those takes were definitely around before Abridged was a thing, but it's hard to remember exactly, like, how prevalent they were, because Abridged has been around for a long time at this point, you know. Probably has quite a bit of influence on it. And, like, while I do appreciate that Abridged is really funny and TFS Vegeta is one of the best things ever, you know, they've kind of not helped with the whole Goku is a fucking moron, you know, a complete fucking idiot savant. That whole take. So we're even watching Abridged as we're watching each saga in the Z portion. So, yeah, like, my wife loves Abridged, obviously. Like, she was struggling really hard to get through the Namek portion, even in Kai, just because there's so much. There are just so many episodes. And Abridged
is kind
of...
Ginyu Force? When the Ginyu Force
woke up, she loved the Ginyu Force. Absolutely.
Everyone loves the Ginyu Force. Like, Toku Sentai.
Toku Sentai.
So why the fuck is Jace from Space Australia? Let's go. Why did they give an Australian accent? I love it, though.
I have no idea.
Again, so I watched, like, Team Four Stars so much, I was like, Berta doesn't sound like that. Then I'll play Sparking Zero. And I'm the fastest in the universe. He's like, oh, he does talk like that. It's not my memory that's wrong. He does talk like an idiot.
Yeah. Yeah. The dub for Dragon Ball is... The English dub is kind of cringe.
I love it, though. I love it because it's what I grew up with. Like, Lucas, you're like...
I get that. You, like,
vary between this, right?
I'm not a big fan of, like, the Bruce Faulkner stuff anymore, or, like, Sean Schemmel's take on Goku, because he's, like, people say that Masako Nozawa's voice grates on their nerves. His voice grates on my nerves. Like, I much more easily accept Masako Nozawa's take on Goku in pretty much every one of his iterations throughout the series than Sean Schemmel's. Like, I feel like they tried to make him too Superman-esque, and now he's trying really hard to try to make the character feel more like the Japanese version, and it's not totally working. I think, I think Masako X, the guy who voices him in TFS, is a better voice actor with more range than Sean Schemmel is, and I think he would be a better fit for that version of Goku. You know, without the stupid take, you know.
No.
And he even has, like, a video where he breaks down what his influence was and why he chose the direction that he did for the tone of the voice and whatnot. And it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I will say, though, I'm not taking no shit on English Frieza.
Oh yeah,
English
he's great.
Freezer playing English Freezer as just an effeminate fop is fantastic.
Yeah, it's
the
great.
They play with the androgyny of Freezer, where it's like, do we actually know what gender Freezer is? Because he's never really established, and I love that they lean into that with the English voice.
Yeah,
it doesn't
yeah.
matter, does it?
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Freezer's just like just a weird alien. You don't need to know.
No, he's a mutant. They're a mutant.
But I fucking love Freezer. Let's go, non-binary icon.
Yeah, absolutely. I fucking love Frieza. And there are aspects of the dub that are, they're like some funny jokes in the dub, for example. Like, there are things that are good about the dub. I'm not saying the whole thing, just throw it out, you know. But I personally would rather watch subbed. So, like, with Daima, I'm not even concerned about when the dub comes out. I don't care. I'm watching it subbed anyway.
I cannot remove myself from the amount of like dub I watched as a kid. So Dragon Ball is the only anime that I can only watch dub. I watch everything else sub, but yeah, I stick to dub.
I get it though. You know, like I don't judge people for only watching the dub. If that's what you like, just go for it. Like,
yeah. And I consume more English voice Dragon Ball content. Like, played a lot of like Dragon Ball Fighters, a lot of Sparking Zero, and just. Yeah. I like to hear the little quips in that because I like the little character interactions you get. But I love, like, Jiren has more personality in Fighter Zero. I mean, in Sparking Zero and Fighters than he does in the show.
He's just a brick.
He's great. I love it. My alien Dorito man. That's another take I can't take. People say Jiren's boring. It's like, no, he's fantastic. Because all he cares about is just fucking punching shit. It's great. He's perfect. He's a perfect, like, counter to all of, like, the waffling about we're doing this, we, like, you know, we're fighting to do all the nonsense. Like, Jiren's like, no, I'm here to kick the fuck out of everyone because I'm saving my universe. I don't want to be here. This is, like, my day off, right? So he even says that, doesn't he, in, like, the show? He's like, look, if my universe is in trouble, I'm going to fuck off and help my universe. I'm here because they told me to be here.
And, you know, to change the topic a little bit, I want to bring in a hot take that I have.
Do it.
And
what's your most searing nuclear take?
Well, my searing take on the subject that we were talking about earlier, which is James Gunn, is that, you know, in a very similar way to how we talk about, like, the Dark Knight being incredible, but also ruining everyone else's superhero movies afterwards, like... Shout out to Guardians of the Galaxy for doing the exact same thing, right?
Oh, yeah. Like, there's leaked Sony emails and stuff, and the studio hacks where there's literal emails between executives who are working on Suicide Squad where they say, yeah, Guardians of the Galaxy's got a lot of music in it. Can we do that for the trailer?
Yeah.
Not realizing that the music has a point and it's linked to the character. It's like, no, but it's got pop music in it. Put that in our movie.
That's been, like, literally... Anytime something is successful or fails in Hollywood, like, leave it to the executives to learn the exact wrong message and lesson. You know, like, oh, that's all I need to make my movie great.
Yeah. It really has been like a solid decade at this point of people just, as you say, learning the exact wrong reasons that Guardians of the Galaxy succeeded and just doing it wrong and just being like, oh, this is... Oh, they're trying Guardians again and getting it wrong again.
Speaking of, like, you know, studios not learning the right lessons, I guess to end on, let's go through now, because there's a section of, like, James Gunn's Wikipedia page I imagine people want us to cover, and it's the controversy section. I don't care enough, and we don't want to delve into it because it's too negative. But there is a section titled James Gunn's Unrealized Projects. And he has got a bunch of unrealized projects that vary in quality and the stage they got to before they were ultimately cancelled. But in the 1990s, he worked on a Gilligan's Island movie that was going to be a piss take that which set Gilligan's Island, about a bunch of people surviving on an island, reimagined as a cannibal film. And it was supported by Warner Bros., but it was not made because the original creator of the show did not like that idea. Then in 1999, an executive producer from 20th Century Fox offered Gunn the chance to write and direct a film about the Silver Surfer. So he could have wrote Silver Surfer. Then in 1999, Gunn wrote an unproduced screenplay for an adaptation of Spy vs. Spy, which would have starred Nicolas Cage and Eddie Murphy.
What?
Yes.
Okay. Right?
in the 2000s, Plastic Man. Well, not much is known about the project or how far it got into production. Gunn did pitch a basic idea back in the early 2000s where Matthew Lillard would have starred as the titular wisecracking hero.
I'd love to see Matthew Lillard as Plastic Man.
Like, do you think he might bring him back? Do you think might now Matthew Lillard's like kind of like his star? It's not risen, but I think people have got an appreciation for just how committed an actor he was in all of his roles, regardless of
I don't know who that is, but
it's Shaggy from Scooby-Doo movies.
Oh shit!
Yeah,
okay. He was
in Plastic Man.
Okay, yeah, I can see it.
Yeah, you know what, James Gunn, bring it back. We also have Scooby-Doo 3, speaking of Shaggy. Gunn was to have helmed a theoretical third Scooby-Doo movie, which had been titled simply Scooby-Doo. So we don't know what like the suffix would have been. However, due to the critical and financial failure of Scooby-Doo 2, Warner Bros. Cancelled the project.
Oh.
Yeah, I realised earlier I popped off for the two Scooby-Doo movies, and actually it's only the first one that's any good, but...
The second one's camp. It has camp value, but we're not saying it's a good movie. It's just it's fun to watch when you've not paid to watch it in a cinema.
But the first one is legitimately still a good movie.
Yeah, and I would love to see that proposed R-rated cut that James Gunn wrote and directed. So apparently the way he made it is he made an R-rated version and then just edited out all the R-rated jokes and then just released that.
Yeah, I heard something about that. Like he was trying to make Velma a lesbian in that, and the executives were like, "Absolutely not! You can't do that."
You wanted to lean into that fan theory, so you do have some allusions to it. Like, there's a bit where you see Fred leering at Daphne, and he looks over and sees Velma doing the same thing. He also put in multiple references to Shaggy being a stoner, where it's like,
how could you not?
You know, like the reggae music, and it's like, man, that's getting nice and toasted, and they're just cooking some burgers. There's also Creature from the Black Lagoon, who's going to work on a remake of that for the Universal Dark Universe. The studio turned down his pitch.
Oh. Yeah, that probably would have been the only good Dark Universe movie.
It might have been. We have here a untitled Satan film. While promoting Sliver, Gunn revealed to IGN he's in the process of writing a much darker movie about Satan, stating, "I feel good about it."
I feel good about Satan.
It never got released.
Oh.
Not surprising at all.
He wrote a script following two cousins who travel from Mexico who achieve a stolen cell phone as a girl's phone number on it. Along the way, shenanigans ensue as they get wrapped up with some sketchy drug dealers and the cartel. The film was going to be called Digits.
Okay.
It's Alive. So in 2010, Larry Cohen stated... in the 2010s, Larry Cohen stated that Gunn had approached him for permission to make a remake of his film It's Alive, which is about an evil killer baby. James Gunn couldn't raise enough money to buy the rights, and Cohen stated, "I'm sorry that I didn't just give them to him."
I'd love to see that.
Yeah.
I didn't know what that movie was about, but just James Gunn doing a killer baby movie sounds like fun.
He was slated to make, in the 2010s again, a Starsky and Hutch TV continuation alongside his brother for Prime Video.
Okay.
Can't say he's not got scope, yeah.
He was in talks also in regards to the MCU. These are the last two projects of the 2010s. An untitled Drax and Mantis spin-off film in addition to a Ravagers TV show. Neither of which materialised because James Gunn wanted to end the Guardians of the Galaxy franchise.
I mean, I guess we did kind of get the Drax Mantis spin-off with the holiday special, right?
They do indeed, yes.
Like half of that film was just those two. Yeah. That special.
And then in the 2020s, the things that he's worked on include Coyote versus Acme, which is a wiki weekend on its own, right? That's an entire episode right there.
So that's the one that
I think
got
I remember hearing about
and
that.
Cancelled.
Yeah, deleted from Warner Bros. Servers. Crypto, one of the projects Gunn considered doing before landing on the Suicide Squad, was a live action film about Crypto, Superman's superpowered dog. He's slated to appear in the 2025 Superman film.
The best boy ever.
Yes. And finally, he had an idea for a Suicide Squad sequel, but it didn't materialise, and he instead made Peacemaker. So I think that's as good as that Suicide Squad movie directed was, like Peacemaker is probably a better continuation of the project. But yeah, man got some range. And there's some of those where I'm like, why did that not get realised, right? Scooby-Doo 3.
Probably because he didn't have a big enough name yet.
Probably
he didn't have the clout.
Do you think...
I want him, though, to like bring back Jokers. You have actors who or directors who work with all the favourite actors.
Mm-hmm.
Bring back Matthew Lillard. Get Freddie Prinze Jr. in. Get all his like his old Scooby Doo like castmates. Get them in.
Do a weird legacy sequel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like Matthew Lillard's Plastic Man.
Yeah.
That sounds great, because he's one actor that, I mean, like, you know, maybe people don't always remember him, but every time I see him in a movie, he is incredible and so committed to every role.
Exactly, yes. I would love to see that. Is there any of those projects you'd like to see, Eric, or any of that you think
the Plastic Man
idea they were cancelled?
I mean, you mentioned a bunch, so, like, Plastic Man, definitely do Plastic Man. Especially with the new DCU, how it's kind of a mix of different tones and whatnot, it probably fit just fine. What I'm really excited about is just seeing a Batman who gets to have actual Batman villains that aren't grounded in grounded reality, you know?
All I want is Mr. Freeze.
Right? How would he work in the Nolanverse? Like, what if we, like, no, just do Mr. Freeze. Like, fuck that shit. Just do Mr. Freeze. Stop being, fucking cowards. Yeah,
Carl and I went on a massive rant about the portrayal of the Riddler in the Batman and just...
Like, as good as that movie is, like, just make the Riddler be the Riddler.
He's not the Riddler in that film.
My favorite riddle is, what about if I just start shooting people? It's like, shit, that's a good riddle. How do you solve this riddle with this Batman? Bam, 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 into a crowd of people. It's like, damn, that's a good riddle.
Yeah.
It would be nice to see an actual, like, rogues gallery rather than just, as you say, a bunch of, like, grittier takes.
Right. And, like, Batman's gritty already. You know? Just adapt the fucking animated series. There you go. Put that on film.
Yeah.
That print fucking money. Same thing with Superman.
I just want Mr. Freeze.
Yeah. No. I want Mr. Freeze. Like, I want Clayface. I want everyone. Colin. What the whole? I want Batman to defeat him with chicken soup too.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Keep him nice and warm.
In the '90s, we just got spoiled, right? With the animated series of both of them plus Justice League.
Yeah, Justice League is just fucking fantastic, especially the Cadmus arc. Just like
it is peak
long form storytelling too. Just like, good shit.
And peak long-form storytelling, Eric, I think, like, you know, we've got to the end of our recording session. Would you like to once again promote your work? Tell us about some other... Where else can people find some peak storytelling?
You can check out any of my books. If you're into more Dragon Ball Dark Fantasy stuff, check out Man Without Hands. I'm working on the third book. Two books are out right now, but, you know... Marketing, it's fun.
You should try it sometime. As well. Don't worry.
If you like cosmic horror, check out Mines Horizon or Echoes of Olympus Mons. Echoes is kind of like a cyberpunk slash, you know, kind of an alien take, but it's a different sort of thing involving quantum physics and like things that you can't see that show up in a dark matter camera and whatnot. It's really fun. It's set on Mars. I'm working on a sequel to that. Cthulhu Grimoire will be coming out this year. It's entering copy edits finally, because I finally got off my ass to finish the edits on it. Mines Horizon, also cosmic horror. It's the sort of the proto office of extra dimensional intelligence OEI stuff that I've been doing for Books of Cthulhu. Check out the Books of Cthulhu as well, because I'm surrounded by some awesome authors in there, and you'll also get a preview for what I'm working on for the audio drama, which will not only debut on my YouTube channel Story Rant, but will also be going to the other podcast platforms as soon as everyone's cast and we have all the roles going and everything. The scripts are pretty much being written right now, and we've got a few ready to go right off the bat, but it's gonna be wild. Like if you like Archive 81 and the Magnus Archives, you'll dig that. And I got a bunch of other shit too, so just follow my links and stuff, and you'll be entertained for a while, a very long while. Probably.
Is that the one where I was going to do a voice, but I'm going to do a silly voice because I'm not a voice actor?
Yeah. I'm looking for a role or something, for you.
I want to be man who gets caught in like like ceiling fan or something, like sucked into air vent.
Okay.
I think I could do a good guy sucked into air vent of like, ah! I think I could do that.
It's all right. Always like kind of thing that Carl and I joke about is that we haven't got experience as voice acting, but we think we'd be good at just doing like one silly line in something, or like a battle cry in a video game of like Berserker Barrage.
Yeah, or just like you said, man sucks into air vent my alien. I could do a good man sucks into air vent my alien.
Well, you know, there's a lot of weird shit happening in this story, so I can probably find a one-off part where a dude just gets swallowed by a dimensional thing.
Yeah, let me do that. Or let me be like
gets
monster
eaten by a Lovecraftian monster, and everyone's just like, "Well, fuck."
Can I make monster noises? I think me and Lucas could do some good monster noises. Because like,
oh yeah, absolutely.
Big fan of like D. Bradley Baker, aren't we? Who's just like Lucas gives you Theron Guard.
Oh god,
the Theron Guard is like punish.
Like, I can't even remember what they called. Like, hostiles.
Yeah.
It's like, don't even know whether I picked up on Discord, but yeah.
Oh, my personal with my nemesis, where it's just, I can do it. You've got to, like, really talk from, like, the back of you through. It's just, stars.
I like
nemesis
that.
Where you just...
That's about, hey, you that's say the extent you're not an actor. I think you could do it.
Yeah. Only that. That's the only thing we could do.
Yeah.
Well, my Berta's pretty good. It was like, stop this in the universe.
There we go.
Everyone
there we
could
go.
Do that, though.
Love that. All right. Well,
I'll leave a bit of prep time.
A little bit. Well, prep time helps you beat anyone, don't you know?
Well, thank you for joining us today, Eric. It has been a pleasure. Hopefully
it's
we can
so
speak to you again in the future. And so everyone's listening at home, just let us know your thoughts. And just check out the links you can find below to follow more of Eric's work and more of ours if you're interested.
Hell yeah.